What's going on, everyone? Welcome into the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast presented by Reality Sports Online. My name is Kyle Yates, and I'm your host. I can be found on Twitter at KyleYNFL. It is a new chapter for the podcast. No Trevor Sikkema. He's on to his full-time job over at PFF. Of course, no Ray Garvin. He's off doing Ray things over there. So we are moving forward now with a rotation of guests, and I have a phenomenal guest on with me today. That is Brett Coleman. He is the creator of The Film Room over on YouTube that has over 300,000 subscribers to that YouTube channel. He's also the host of the Bootleg Football Podcast. He can be found on Twitter at Brett Coleman. Brett, thank you so much for carving some time out of your busy schedule to come down and chat with me, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, we got a crazy hectic day. We are recording this on Tuesday, and of course, we're recording this around 1 p.m. Eastern. Earlier today, we had the news that Cam Newton has been released from the New England Patriots. Now, there was talk, there was some chatter, you know, Bill Belichick refusing to announce that Cam Newton was the starting quarterback, which was like, okay, we could see Mac Jones as a starter week one. Man, I didn't see this coming. I didn't see Cam Newton outright being released, unless this was something where he was just like, if you're not going to start me, release me. This is a really interesting situation here. So I want to get your perspective on this as, you know, a film guy, as someone who has a great understanding of the game of football. How does this offense change from Cam Newton and what he brought to the table to then Mac Jones? What is your initial thoughts? What are your initial takeaways here now that we know that Mac Jones is going to be starting in New England?
I mean, the main thing it changes for me, it doesn't really change the passing game, but it does change how I think they were going to deploy their running game, because Cam is, you know, such a unique threat with his feet that just Mac Jones is not. You know, we saw last year, even though, you know, when Tom was there for two decades, they weren't running QB power. They weren't running option. They weren't running bash. They were doing all that stuff with Cam, though. And he was arguably their best goal line threat because of how he changes the math in the run game. And I kind of feel like they were weighing the value of that versus, you know, getting Mac Jones on the field without any sort of, I guess you could say, competition, and just rolling with him and developing him as a passer, which he is just kind of a typical pocket passer. And in the end, they just went with the passing upside, I guess you could say, of Mac Jones versus the running floor of what Cam Newton gives to guys like Ramondre Stevenson and all them.
Yeah, so Damian Harris, I want to talk about him because he's going to be the quote-unquote riser here in this situation, right? You go from an offense that figured to be predominantly run heavy, but Cam Newton was going to be taking a lot of those rush attempts, overall rush attempts, kind of like Lamar Jackson does in Baltimore. And particularly, like you said, in the red zone, he was just such a factor there, where I think last year, off the top of my head, Cam Newton, 42 red zone carries, Damian Harris only with like 8. So, you know, I think that we're going to see that tick up here this year, but the contrast of Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson, I want to get your thoughts on this really quick, and then we'll move on to your all underrated team here. Ramondre Stevenson obviously comes out of Oklahoma. I really liked his tape. He lands here in New England and was like, okay, well, you got Sony Michel, you got Damian Harris above him on the depth chart, a couple pass catching options. It's hard to see how Stevenson finds his way. What does this do for Damian Harris, though? Does Stevenson become that goal line back, or should we be concerned about that? Or does Damian Harris really have this backfield to himself?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the oldest fantasy football rules in the book is whoever you draft from the Patriots backfield, you're going to be wrong.
Right.
Like, let's just be real about that. Like, Damian Harris, yeah, in theory, he's the lead back. He'll get more goal line carries. You know, third down will probably be split by James White, J.J. Taylor. Ramondre will come in and he'll get some early down work. You know, Brandon Bolden's really more of a special teamer for them, but he's not incapable of carrying the ball. In theory, Damian Harris is going to be the guy, but I just know deep down in my bones that if I take him where I value him, I'm going to get burned and it's going to piss me off. And it's no fault of Harris's himself. Like, Ramondre, really good player. J.J. Taylor, absolutely been great in the preseason, and he was great when he was coming out of college too. And then James White is the steady Eddie there. So it's tough for me to like completely go all in on Damian Harris because of the team he plays for. But in terms of just like pure talent and like what he can do on paper, yeah, he should be a massive riser in fantasy right now.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on here to your all underrated team. But before we do that, I want to remind people that we have a giveaway going on courtesy of our friends at Pristine Auction. This is a Cam Akers signed helmet. So if you want to get your hands on this Cam Akers signed helmet, this is the last chance to enter it. We're moving into a new giveaway for the month of September. So head over to Apple Podcasts or CastBox, leave a review for the show. Then head over to fantasypros.com/dynastycontest and fill out the short form there. Attach a screenshot that you are that you left a review over on our Apple Podcasts or CastBox channel and fill, attach that to the form that you fill out, and you are automatically entered for that Cam Akers signed helmet. Additionally, if you are a subscriber to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros, you get an additional 3 entries into this giveaway. So make sure that you take advantage of that. Again, that is a Cam Akers signed helmet courtesy of our friends at Pristine Auction, fantasypros.com/dynastycontest for more information. All right, Brett, you did a fantastic series over on your YouTube channel highlighting some underrated fantasy assets. You broke it down by position group. And so I wanted to have you on here to be able to kind of walk through these players that you had and maybe even some that didn't make the cut and build an all underrated, you know, team heading into 2021. And I think this is pertinent for dynasty purposes because the underrated aspect of this insinuates that they're going to be, you know, they're going to be overrated or highly valued heading into next year. And that's valuable for dynasty purposes for dynasty fantasy football leagues. So I want to kick this over to you. Who is the first running back that you want to highlight here that you're saying, man, people are just not valuing this player correctly heading into 2021?
You know, this one's it's an interesting question because it's another one of these really murky backfields that nobody can quite figure out yet. But I've always been a big believer in Devin Singletary's talent. And when I watch him on the field in these preseason games, like even compared to Zach Moss, who's also another really good running back, and, you know, Breida's gotten some work as well. Like Singletary just looks quicker, more explosive. He just looks like the most gifted back in that backfield to me. And it's been hard for me the last couple years to parse out how good I think he is as a football player compared to what his situation is. And it feels like the situation never really caught up to what he is in terms of a talent. But then you look at this preseason and he's actually, you know, getting most of the snaps,
yeah,
you know, with the starters out there. I know that they threw it like 12 straight times in the last preseason game.
I was going to bring that up, but yeah.
But I think the fact that they were passing and passing and passing and Singletary was still on the field and catching a couple of those passes, that to me signals that at minimum, he's going to be their third down back with some other upside to get early down work as well. Because the week before that, they were feeding him in the ground game too. So weirdly enough, even though all offseason, everybody was like, Zach Moss is the guy, Zach Moss is the guy, I kind of feel like Devin Singletary is the guy. And I know that I could very easily get burned by saying that. But I don't know, just looking at them on film and then seeing who's actually getting snaps with the ones, kind of feels like Devin Singletary is the one to get there.
He's always impressed me, right? He's been a dynamic player when he's been on the field. I do think that he's kind of taken it to another level this preseason, you know, in comparison to, especially to Zach Moss and Matt Breida, the question always will be, well, what's the workload, right? You know, you talk about them passing 12 straight times or whatever it was to start that preseason drive with the starters, right? And that's the concern. But if Devin Singletary is on the field and he is a very capable pass catcher, he's one of these guys that is just completely written off, specifically in dynasty format. So I think that it's a good thing here that you're highlighting him to be able to say, like, let's not completely write this guy off. If he can take the starting role from Zach Moss and Matt Breida, right, then he is going to be valuable for fantasy football, and people are not thinking about that. So, all right, let's go to your next running back here. Who is another running back that you're highlighting on this all underrated team?
Well, I almost feel like he's not underrated anymore, but I've been on him since like March. And so I feel like I need to be on him again one more time for old time's sake. And that's Trey Sermon. He has been my highest rated rookie running back in any format, any style of league since draft day, specifically because of where he went, which is San Francisco. And, you know, there's the whole thing of, oh, Kyle Shanahan makes 1,000 yards backs out of anybody. But Kyle Shanahan typically doesn't invest high draft capital into a running back unless right. He really, really, really loves them. And Trey Sermon is a guy who's a perfect fit for that system. They ran mostly zone stuff at Ohio State when he was there. A lot of outside zone and mid zone, which is what they do in San Francisco. Excellent contact balance, way better feet than a typical running back that's 220, 225, got soft hands. I think he could very easily be an every down back for them. And I know that Mostert is going to get carries, but when I look at like who's going to get goal line work, who's going to get short yardage work, who's going to get the most volume, to me, it's probably Trey Sermon by a pretty significant margin, not just this year, but every year going forward.
Does the potential that Trey Lance brings to this offense, does that take Trey Sermon to a whole other level for you? Like where if it was Jimmy Garoppolo, like we know that Trey Sermon's probably going to get quite a bit of work, but the offense might just be kind of, you know, it's going to be good. But with Trey Lance taking over, this offense truly could just ascend and go nuclear. So does that play a role in it for you? Or are you saying like no matter what, Trey Sermon is underrated and he's going to produce for fantasy football rosters this year?
Yeah, I think Trey Lance actually helps both Sermon and Mostert, but for different reasons. Like we saw in the last preseason game, they brought Lance in the middle of the drive and ran QB counter bash. And because of that, you know, they were able to get a plus two in terms of pulling blockers out in front of Mostert to the edge. And he ripped off like 17 or 18 yards, like just randomly in the middle of the drive. Like it was Sermon, counter bash, Mostert gets the ball, big gain. And I think when Lance is in the game, it's going to help Sermon too, because now you can do all like all the inside zone read stuff, which is better for Sermon, where it's just going to slow down those edge defenders from crashing just a tick. And if you're not meeting him square in that hole, he's going to get an extra 3 or 4 yards. So it helps both of them equally. And at least, you know, since I own a heavy share of Sermon in pretty much every league that I'm in, I hope that Lance gets on the field early and often, because that's going to help me fantasy-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, no matter what, week one, the 49ers played Detroit this year. And I just can't wait to see the numbers that Trey Sermon puts up in week one and Raheem Mostert. I mean, they're both just going to feast on that Detroit Lions defense. All right, let's move on to the wide receiver position here. You had a couple of really interesting names here at the wide receiver position. So I don't know your list. I don't want to steal anything or spoil anything. So who is the first wide receiver that you want to point out here saying that they're underrated?
Again, this is another one that I feel like he's become a little bit more popular as preseason has gone on because his role has really solidified. But Laviska Shenault Jr. is going to be a thing this year, guys.
Yep.
I promise you that. He is their main slot receiver, but with Travis Etienne's injury, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him a significant number of snaps at H-back as well, because he's the best guy left on the roster to do that. And Etienne, you know, when he was drafted and then there was like, oh, he's taking snaps at receiver and OTAs and stuff. And it's like, well, yeah, he's playing H-back. That's what H-backs do in that system, is it's kind of like a hybrid running back wide receiver. And Etienne was perfect for that. Now I think it's going to be Laviska, and they're basically going to do like a quasi 21 personnel thing with him on occasion with James Robinson in the backfield. Not to mention, he's also going to be the slot receiver. He's a good deep threat. He's bigger than most slot corners, so you can call like all your slot fade stuff to him. If you get like a single high man look, it's like an automatic check for them. He's going to get the most volume, I think, out of any receiver, quote unquote, for that entire team. Marvin Jones might be like the most yards per catch. Chark might get the most touchdowns, but Laviska is going to get the most volume. So especially if you're in like PPR, that's the dude to own. He's going to be a monster.
This was such an interesting selection, right, with Travis Etienne in the first round. And you say, okay, well, you got James Robinson. And if you're purely looking at Etienne as a running back, you look at the James Robinson, you go, James Robinson was actually fantastic last year. I don't know why you spent a first round pick on a running back. Then you kind of dive into it a little bit more and you say, oh, okay, this is the role that he's going to take. You say the H-back role that he's going to be involved as that horizontal speed aspect to the game that Urban Meyer has utilized so much throughout his college coaching career. But it was so interesting because you already had that kind of guy on the roster in Laviska Shenault. Like Shenault, for everything that for injury history and everything like that, like he is a phenomenal football player when he's on the field, and he can be a very, very versatile option. You even had him running Wildcat at his time in Colorado. So he's extremely versatile now with the, and I was off of Laviska Shenault because I thought that Etienne was going to take this role. Now with the Etienne injury, I've been very vocal saying Laviska Shenault is going to eat this year. So I absolutely agree here, man. Why do you think that they went with Etienne? And they've been vocal. They wanted Kadarius Toney. Like they wanted Kadarius Toney to play this role. Why do you think they went that route, Jacksonville, when they had someone like Laviska Shenault on the roster? Can you make sense of that?
I think it's because they knew they were not going to get Kyle Pitts. And I think they knew that, I mean, they probably wanted Pat Freiermuth, but it was kind of dicey if they were going to be able to get him, at least without some sort of like trade situation. Everything. He ended up going to Pittsburgh and he's been great for them, obviously.
Yeah.
But I feel like in their war room, they were like, look, we don't have tight ends. We just do not have good tight ends. Let's build our offense around 20 personnel, two backs, no tight ends, three receivers on the field, and basically just run a lot of the same stuff that we would have run out of either 12 or 21 and just sure. do it from 20. And so you're getting Robinson on the field, you're getting Etienne on the field, LaVisca, Jones, and Shark as your five skill position players. I really think that's what they wanted to do. And now that kind of throws a wrench into it where they're going to have to do like more 10 personnel that's quasi two back mm-hmm. because LaVisca will be a running back. And then they'll bring in, you know, a fourth wide receiver technically to be their slot guy whenever LaVisca is an H-back. It's going to be a fascinating offense to watch. I'm still not entirely sure how they're going to do it, but that's my theory just based on what I know about what Urban likes to do.
This is the fun part of the offseason for me. I don't know what it's like for you, but once we see all the landing spots and stuff like that, and then trying to put together the pieces to the puzzle and say, like, what are the roles? How do they all fit together? And with Jacksonville, it's one of those ones where I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how it's all going to work together. So I'm really interested to see them week one. And again, they get the Houston Texans week one. So we're going to see some points up on the board there. All right, let's go to your second wide receiver here.
So this one, I don't want to say it's like chalk, but I do know that I'm higher on him than virtually everybody else because I feel like Brandon Ayuk is going to finish as like a top six or seven fantasy receiver this year.
Ooh, all right.
I really do. I have him like I am taking him top of the third round every single time if I can. And I would have taken him earlier, but I just felt like I didn't really need to because he typically doesn't go until after that right. anyway. So right. you know, why bother? But he is going to be on every single one of my teams. Literally every single one of my teams, because I think his skill set is very Davante Adams-ish. And I think when you look at historically what happens in this system when there is a capable X receiver, Kyle Shanahan has not always had capable X receivers, which is Ayuk's role. But when he does have them, you get Andre Johnson's production in 08 and 09, back-to-back leading the NFL in receiving. Julio in 15 and 16, where he's getting like 200 targets in his first year in this system,
right.
despite having all the other receiving talent around him. Pierre Garçon in Washington, leading the league in targets, leading the league in catches. And that's Pierre Garçon. Like, I think Ayuk is at least as talented as Pierre Garçon. When this system has an X, they feed him the ball a lot. And I just know that Brandon Ayuk is going to have a special year. You're going to get him as like, what, wide receiver 18, 15 to 18, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll finish as wide receiver 6 to 7.
Sure. I mean, that's highlighting a guy who we can say from a dynasty perspective, you know, he's going at point X right now. But man, next year at this time, we could be drafting him 10 spots higher than where he's going, 15 spots higher. Does that record that you talked about with Andre Johnson, Pierre Garçon, guys like that, was there, and I just can't think of it off the top of my head, was there a tight end like George Kittle in those types of offenses that commanded the amount of targets that Kittle does, right? Because that's my concern, is when Kittle is healthy, the ball is going his way, at least from what we've seen previously. And Brandon Ayuk was fantastic last year when he had that stretch, but we saw Kittle in and out of the lineup. So is that a concern for you? It sounds like it's not, right? Because you're drafting Ayuk everywhere, but is there a track record of having that type of tight end in this offense that can take away so many targets?
The closest I could think of is Owen Daniels in Houston, who was...
Man, that's a name that I haven't heard in a long time.
He was kind of like their de facto number two receiver. There was never anybody like George Kittle. There's been very few people in the last 20 years like George Kittle, right. Let's be honest. But I also do feel like... these two are more going to work in tandem and help each other rather than cannibalize and hurt each other.
Before we keep moving with today's episode, I want to take a second to thank Reality Sports Online for sponsoring today's podcast. By now, most of you have heard about Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to go see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Think it sounds complicated? It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online Fantasy Front Office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league, it just requires more strategy. Do you think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. Still not sure? You can test out your general manager skills for free in a mock free agency auction. If you like what you see, use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. All right, let's move on to the tight end position here. We were just talking about George Kittle. Let's go to another tight end here that you believe is underrated heading into 2021.
Man, this one hurts because I would have said Irv Smith, and then there's this kind of mystery injury. Do we even know what that is, by the way?
I really don't think so. I really don't think that we've had like clarity on what exactly it is.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. And so I'm kind of splitting it between two guys because it depends on where you play fantasy, because not every place actually has him listed as a tight end. But Juwan Johnson with the Saints is effectively a tight end for them, more of like a big slot. So again, a lot of places have him listed as a wide receiver. If you happen to play in one of those places, disregard that. But Juwan Johnson, like even when Adam Trautman was on the field, he was the dude that they were throwing to in that, you know, big slot tight end role that we typically associate with the Sean Payton offense. Jimmy Graham had that role notably before they drafted Michael Thomas several years later. And then Thomas kind of played that big slot role. Like my theory was that with Thomas out in the first couple months, Trautman was going to be that guy in that role, and then it ended up being Juwan Johnson. So again, just depends on where you play. But if you're in a place where Juwan is classified as a receiver and you need a true tight end, Pat Freiermuth, who I mentioned earlier, is going to be the guy with the Steelers. If he hasn't already taken Eric Ebron's job, he definitely will very quickly. He's a better blocker, so he's going to be on the field more, especially when there are 11 personnel, because he's a better inline guy than Ebron is, but he can also do all the detached stuff that Ebron does. You can use him as a big slot. He catches everything, so he's going to be a really good red zone target for them. Pat Freiermuth is one of my favorite tight end prospects to come out in the last several years. And if he wasn't in the same class as Kyle Pitts, far and away best tight end this class. The only reason he wasn't is because of Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I've been saying that nonstop all offseason. Was just like, if we didn't have Kyle Pitts in this class, we'd be talking about Pat Freiermuth as a first round talent. No questions asked. And I really still, even to this day, like have no idea how he fell. I think pick 52 overall to Pittsburgh. Like, I just don't understand how he fell to that point. And we're seeing it here in the preseason in his limited action, right? He's making plays and he's a big physical presence in the red zone. He's one of those guys that got kind of knocked for his blocking, but I didn't see that. I thought that he was a very capable blocker. I think that he eventually can take over that tight end one role from Eric Ebron pretty easily, actually. I think that that is quite possible. And even this is the question, too, and I'm glad that I'm having you on because I want to talk about this. One of the things that I've kind of theorized is, okay, with the selection of Pat Freiermuth in the second round, they had offensive line needs, right? They took a running back in the first round, and then they come back and they grab a tight end. It's like, okay, Pittsburgh, what are you doing? Underneath Matt Canada, do you think they're going to run more 12 personnel here? Is that like, I'm trying to make sense again, pieces to the puzzle. I'm trying to make sense. Why did they draft Pat Freiermuth unless they were just completely out on Eric Ebron? Why did they spend that second round pick on Pat Freiermuth?
You know, they spent one because they did want to have an inline tight end that could reliably kick out a defensive end. They wanted a guy that, you know, on like a sift block going across the back, he could kick out an end that's crashing, and Ebron would typically get blown up doing that. They wanted a guy that could locate and lock on a linebacker on the second level, while also being a great threat in the receiving game. And Ebron is, for all intents and purposes, just a big slot. He's not really that great of a blocker unless he's leading on like a bubble on like a corner that's 40 pounds lighter than him, you know. But in terms of taking on somebody his same size or bigger, Freiermuth is really the guy to do that. And Canada traditionally has favored 21, 12, and 22 personnel looks so that they can run the ball. I wouldn't be surprised that if they feel like their best way to run it is in 11 personnel, because again, it only takes one missed block to ruin a run. If Ebron is really not bringing his A game as a blocker this year when they're in 12 personnel. I wouldn't be surprised if they just go to 11 and they just try to run against a lighter box when they have Freiermuth on the field. Either way, Freiermuth is getting all those snaps. And if he's on the field for rundowns and they're effectively running the ball with him, that means he's also going to be on the field for play action passes.
Right. He's staying on the field.
So it's not just a talent thing. It's a volume thing with him. He is going to get volume.
Juwan Johnson, let's go back to him really quickly, and then we'll get to your quarterback before we wrap up here. Juwan Johnson, right? Like, people have hyped up Adam Trautman, and I was one of them. I thought that someone needed to step up in this Saints offense, right? You lose Michael Thomas, Jared Cook moves on. Like, there are just holes everywhere on this offense here as far as pass catchers. So Juwan Johnson, though, apparently has kind of taken over this role from Adam Trautman. And should we be super concerned about Adam Trautman, or do you think that there's enough opportunity where both of these guys could potentially be fantasy football relevant?
I would be a little bit concerned, especially because he's already hurt. And as my buddy Nick Ercolano says, don't go looking for injuries in fantasy football because injuries will look for you. So I'm probably just not really going to draft Trautman at all because A, it's shaky enough that he was even going to have the role that I wanted for him. And B, again, he's already hurt. So if anything, again, in a league that allows you to draft him as a tight end, I'm taking Juwan Johnson as a tight end because he could be a very, very sneaky play this year.
All right, let's move on to the quarterback position here and wrap things up. Who is a quarterback that makes the all underrated team?
This is tough because there's so many guys in like that QB 13 to QB 20 where you could argue for any of them potentially being a guy that sneaks into being like a lower QB 1. But I'm going to go with Derek Carr. And Derek Carr, I think, is not just underrated in fantasy, but underrated in actual football too.
Yeah.
With what he did last year, despite having so many injuries on the offensive line. I mean, they had like a different starting five almost every single week. Bryan Edwards was banged up virtually the entire year. Henry Ruggs got off to kind of a slow start and was not the kind of guy that they thought they were. Let me put it this way. They passed on Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb for Henry Ruggs, and he was not producing like those guys. You know, Darren Waller was their de facto number one receiver. You know, running backs were banged up. Like it was. And the defense was terrible, so he was always playing in a hole. Like, it was a rough situation for Derek Carr, and he still finished his QB 13. Like, people forget that. He still finished that high. This year, you're going to have Bryan Edwards healthy, who's had a phenomenal camp. Darren Waller is back from his ankle and seemingly doing just fine. The offensive line, even though it's a bunch of new faces, at least they're healthy, and they've played pretty well in the preseason together, mind you. And the defense, theoretically, should be a lot better as well. The supporting structure around Derek Carr is far superior than last year, and so I see no reason why he shouldn't be in that same kind of anywhere from QB 10 to QB 16 range, and depending on who your main starter is, you might actually throw Derek Carr in there in a few weeks if he has a better matchup and probably outscore your starter.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, like, we as fantasy football managers, we love the shiny new toy, right? We love the upside. We love what the mystery box of the Trey Lances, the Justin Fields, even Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, and now Mac Jones, right? And so I think we fall more in love with those guys when Derek Carr, he's just kind of, he's there, right? In our minds, right? He's just there. And I think that that's what makes him underrated, because you're saying that even though we have this perception of him, he is still performing incredibly well for fantasy football. We just don't recognize it, or we don't want to acknowledge it because of what could be with some of these other guys. So in a super flex roster, right, and from a dynasty perspective, having Derek Carr as your QB2 is not a bad thing, right? That is something that you can absolutely go to war with this year because of what he can be with this offense. Before we move on from Las Vegas and kind of get out of here, Henry Ruggs, I want to get your opinion on this, because I heading into this year, I was like, okay, they brought in John Brown, and he's going to be this field stretching option right early on, right in free agency. It's kind of my thoughts. And Hunter Renfrow, right? He rode the bench last year, really didn't get much playing time. All right, Henry Ruggs probably going to start in 12 personnel, and then he'll move kick inside to the slot. And that's what I thought that he needed to be utilized as an underneath player that can create after the catch. It's what he was so good at Alabama. This field stretching role that they've got him playing is not what is best utilized to fit his skill set, in my opinion. So I want to turn that back over to you. Now that we know that John Brown's kind of on the roster bubble, he might be actually cut by the time that we finish recording this. And then you got Hunter Renfrow protected to be the slot receiver. Ruggs playing outside and Bryan Edwards playing outside. Should we be completely off of Henry Ruggs in this Las Vegas Raiders offense? Or do you think there is an opportunity for him to kind of find a role as some stuff underneath?
Yeah, I wouldn't be completely off of him, but I would just recognize the fact that, like, again, I said this even before last year, like when I was doing my sleepers video last year, I said the Raiders rookie to own is Bryan Edwards because he fits Derek Carr's play style. Yeah. Derek Carr likes having big bodied physical dudes with catch radius that make him feel a little bit safer about taking that shot because it ups the percentages on a quote unquote low percentage ball. So the speed is nice and Carr has the arm to hit him, but it's a matter of what kind of receivers Carr likes to play with. So I agree, if you're going to use Ruggs, like, you want to get him moving on screens, you know, shallow crosses where you can just kind of pick up yak.
Yep.
If you want to have him outside and just kind of run clear outs just to really open up the middle of the field for Waller and Edwards, that's fine. Like, that, they do need that in that offense, and just the threat right. of him can make the offense better. But in terms of, like, actual production for fantasy versus his value as a football player, they're two very different conversations. And I still think this year, just like last year, that Bryan Edwards is the guy to own there among Raiders receivers.
Man, I love me some Bryan Edwards. I loved him coming out of South Carolina. Was bummed when he was injured his rookie season. I think that he is in line for a big year as well. All right, Brett, thank you so much, man, for taking some time out of your busy schedule. That's going to do it for today's episode. Huge thank you to Reality Sports Online for sponsoring today's podcast. Brett, what do you got going on, man? What's up next here for the Film Room? Where can people connect with you on social media? Anything else that you want to talk about? What you got going on?
Well, I just released an episode a couple days ago on Trey Lance and, you know, the debate about whether or not to start him over Jimmy Garoppolo. It seems like since I released that, the Niners have made it clear that they're just going to use both of them. So we'll see how that goes. And then I'll be in Vegas next week, I believe it is, for week one. Speaking of the Raiders, I'm going to watch Ravens at Raiders out in Vegas, going up to Seattle in week two. So travel schedule's filling up pretty quick here.
That's awesome, man. Super excited for you. Love the YouTube channel. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. All right. That'll do it for today's episode. For Brett Coleman, I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Fantasy Pros.